Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Originally hailing from four different parts of Ireland, with completely different backgrounds, the High Kings formed in Dublin back in 2008, musically tipping their hat to the ancient High Kings who ruled Ireland centuries ago. The High Kings, now consisting of vocalists and multi-instrumentalists Finbar Clancy, Darren Holden, Brian Dunphy, and Paul O'Brien, first spun heads via their 2008 self-titled platinum debut full-length album, rocketing to number 2 on the World Billboard music chart, before going on to release their certified platinum 2010 album, Memory Lane. Now, with 10 studio albums under their belts, including their acclaimed most recent LP, The Road Not Taken, in 2023, the High Kings are globally revered for their rowdy and fun-fueled onstage presence, as well as their ability to weave modern and entirely relatable sonic wizardry into the Irish folk genre, a fact that is reflected in the band breaking records and selling out venues across the world, and whether collaborating with Journey frontman Steve Perry, playing to 30,000 fans, performing on top of the Empire State Building, appearing on Smash soundtracks, or charming audiences on The Late Late Show. 2025 marks yet another luminous high point in the High Kings' incredible ongoing journey. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing their journey in the entertainment world and their upcoming tour to Australia, is Brian Dunphy and Paul O'Brien from the High Kings. Brian, where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I am in North County Dublin at the moment. I am 5 minutes from the beautiful beach here in Dublin, and I am doing great. Thank you so much for asking.
Paul, where do we find you?
I am in a town called Rathdowney in County Leash. I am based in the Midlands in Ireland. I would be a 1 hour drive from Dublin and I would be a 1 hour drive from Cork. So I'm based practically in the middle.
Brian, where does the name The High Kings come from? How was that chosen?
That's a very good question. I suppose when we wanted to kind of do a bit of a resurgence to the folk Irish music, we needed to have a name that was going to capture and mean a lot to people across the world. And with, you know, emigration that happened in Ireland such a long time ago, we wanted to reach out to all of the millions of Irish people, or people who can claim to be Irish, shall we say, across the world. So we needed a name that was going to kind of was really, would really mean something to them. So the High Kings, I suppose the general idea behind it is that there were kings all over Ireland at one stage, and especially in each county and each province. And they had to hide once the English came over and they did their thing. And then what happened was the kings dispersed across the country, and then nobody actually found out who they were or where the bloodline went to. So we can all actually claim to have a bit of royalty in our blood as Irish men and Irish women across the world. So the High Kings is just something that kind of feeds off that little bit of fun back, you know, centuries ago.
Paul, heading to you, at what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this creative music world. How did that journey progress? How did you meet the other guys from the band? And how was the band formed?
I was always interested in music from a young age. My dad played a couple of instruments as well, so I probably learned music through him. Growing up, we had what was called cassette tapes back in the old days, back in the black and white days. And I learned to play the tin whistle, just putting on cassette tapes and playing along to them. Then I gradually went to other instruments. My chance with the High Kings came when I heard there was a guy leaving the band, and I got in touch with Darren. And Darren would have seen me on Facebook doing different things, songs and playing instruments and that. And I reached out to Darren, and luckily for me, I was accepted.
Brian, at what age did your passion ignite for music, and how did your journey progress, and how did you form and meet the rest of the guys from the band?
Well, I grew up in the very late 70s and, of course, into the 80s. And I loved the UK music that was coming out at the time. And my sister's 4 years older than me. I'd be closest to her. And she was listening to Duran Duran and Culture Club and all of these mad 80s bands. And that's kind of where my love of incredible melodies that started happening within me. My own father is a singer. His name is Sean Dunphy. He sang for 55 years of his life. He passed away in 2011. He was in the very famous Eurovision Song Contest in 1967 and represented Ireland and came second. And Sandy Shaw won with a song called Puppet on a String, written yep. by the incredible Phil Coulter. And my love of music just really came from him. And I was doing a little bit of touring with him when I was a very young boy. And then I kind of bit the bug and I started going into doing different types of musicals and stuff like that as I was 18, 19, 20. And then I joined Riverdance for 5.5 years in the Three Irish Tenors, and giving you a very quick synopsis of my life. I've known Darren since the mid 1990s. We met, that's Darren Holden, of course, in the band. We met in the middle of the 1990s. We were doing a talent competition together, and then we ended up in Riverdance for a couple of years. So we became really, really good friends in those times. And then I actually rang him and to say, I've just got wind of this new band that's forming called the High Kings, and do you want to be part of it? And he was just finishing up doing Moving Out, which was a musical that Billy Joel, based on Billy Joel's musical out in America, and he just happened to be coming home. That's when the High Kings was formed, and that was back in 2007.
Do you mean River Dance, as in Michael Flatley's dancing? You were part of that?
Yes, correct. Well, Michael Flatley was the originator from Riverdance back in the day.
Yes.
But he only lasted 6 weeks in the actual show, and then, of course, he formed Lord of the Dance.
Yes.
I never got to meet him personally. I've met him a few times during different types of corporate events and that. He's an absolutely wonderful man. You know, he is the Lord of the Dance, in fairness. I joined in 98 as a singer, not a dancer. And I did the lead singing, and I was in Broadway in New York for a couple of years. And so it's been great. I've been very, very lucky in my career.
Paul, how does the band create music or create a song?
Basically, we get together, we write a song. We like to teach songs fairly upbeat. We have a song actually out at the moment called 77A. It's about a bus journey. Tells a story basically about Darren and how he met his wife, and it's a great lively tune. But we like to keep things lively, but we also like to keep a few golden oldies like slow songs in the mix as well. But yeah, no, we sit around, we'd write songs, we get together in the studio, and we just go in, we do our bits. Brian will go in, he'll do what he has to do. We're all the same. Finbar, he go in, I'll go in, Darren will go in, and we all add our own little bit to the track, and hey presto, at the end it comes out fantastic.
Brian, anything to add?
Yeah, I think the four of us are from kind of completely different backgrounds, even though we've grown up in Ireland. You know, our genres or our taste of music has been very, very different. So we do bring rock in there, we bring folk in there. There's a little bit of metal sometimes that sneaks in and little arrangements. So, you know, and of course we have our trad in there, and Paul's an incredible whistle player, and he brings all that element into it. So it's hugely important for us as the High Kings to, we use this word, we made it up. We like to folkify these arrangements. We make it into what we feel as the four of us, and what we grew up in, and what we grew up listening to. We put those little elements into our arrangements, and it's hugely important to be able to do that. Like, I've loved Coldplay for the last 20 years. There's a couple of songs that would have a little touch on that in the show as well, but they will also have that Irishness in the songs. And I think it's important to do that, because you don't want all your songs to sound the same. The four of us are completely different solo artists that come together to form this band, the High Kings. So you've got four solo singers. We have 15 instruments between us that we play. So every song sounds completely different to an audience's ears. You're not listening to the one singer for a 2-hour show. And I think that's what makes us completely different to any other band that's out there.
Paul, what do you enjoy about performing live?
I just love feeding off the crowd's energy, to be honest. When you're standing on a stage and you're looking out into a crowd and you're seeing babies only a couple of months old, to people in their 90s, and it's just fantastic to see that different range of age groups coming to our shows. But when you're standing on the stage and the crowd are just standing on their feet and they're tapping, and it's fantastic to look out, and you get a great buzz from it, you know. And it keeps you going on the stage as well. And it just makes that show extra special.
Brian?
You know, the amount of touring that we do, like we did 19 shows in July in America. And, you know, it's 6 and 7 hour drives a day. You know, you go in there, you get to your hotel, you spend a half an hour in there, you go straight to the venue, you do your sound check, you have some food. And, you know, you're going to be tired. You're going to have all of that. But once you hear that intro music, to get on that stage and you get the crowd up on their feet from the beginning and you know that they're right behind you and you're in there for that one experience that everybody's going to have together. I think that's the most important thing for the bands, that if we can kind of help in any way to even put smiles on their faces and forget about the world for a couple of hours, that's the energy that we bring to them, but they give that back to us and it makes for an incredible night.
I'm that guy right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, and I put it away. I notice these days a lot of people are videoing and posting and tweeting and doing whatever they're doing for a lot of period of time during the show. You reference being in that moment, being the experience and in that energy exchange. Do you not find that people on their phones take away from that as the person on the stage seeing phones, Brian, or do you just feel that it's where society is at the moment?
I think it is that. I think it is the latter. It is where the society is at the moment. I don't think we'll ever stop it. You know, obviously there are plenty of artists and actors and comedians that are asking for the phones to be put away before shows and stuff like that. A lot of the venues that we do are big theaters, so they're not allowed to use their phones during the show anyway. Because they'll have that brightness around their faces. So, you know, we wouldn't be doing a lot of rock, shall we say, stand-up venues that'll have the phones up. And, you know, you'll get those moments where you'll ask people to take their phones out and put the flash, the torch on it and create that moment, which is always beautiful. It doesn't matter whether you're in a small venue or a big venue. Personally, I prefer people not to use their phones. You need to be in that moment and you don't want to ruin anybody else's experience. We've all seen it on TikTok. We've all seen it on the social media. People using their phones and they're screaming and roaring the songs out and people going, I didn't pay to hear that person screaming and roaring the songs that I paid to hear the artist. That's the thing about music and going to see shows and artists. So that, I know this sounds very strange, but you do. You give yourselves to them for 2 hours. And that's the experience that you've paid for. It's the experience that you've wanted for maybe months that they had bought those tickets in advance. So it's hugely important. I'll give you an example. I'm going to see Coldplay very soon, and I've missed the last two opportunities to go and see them because we were actually gigging ourselves, and I'm actually going to Wembley to go and see them in London. It's going to be an experience I know that I'm never, ever going to be affected, but I'm not taking my phone out. I'll put it that way to you. I might take a few pictures at the start and take pictures of the crowd, but yeah, you know, I'm never going to look back on a phone and look back at the videos. I'm just not. Put it in here and leave it there.
Paul, anything to add?
As Brian said, we do play a lot of theatres and there is a lot of people that don't know, say they take out their phone to video a song, but one of the stewards in the theatre will come over and say, sorry, would you mind putting your phone away? And they would do that. They would do that. Getting back, it is all part of society now, because no matter where you go, if you go into a restaurant and there's a couple sitting at the table, there's nobody talking anymore. Yeah. Both people are on their phones. You see people walking the streets with their head down. They're not even looking where they're going. They're looking at their phone walking. You know, it's just, everything is just based around phones these days. So I'd be like Brian, I'd prefer people not using their phones. But then a lot of people use their phones and maybe send it all to the High Kings website. You know, just to say that they were at the concert and the song was great and here it is. But I'd go to a concert, listen, sing along, do what you have to do without phones. But that's just me.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange. Thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you guys are aware, massive uptick of physical around the world. Last year in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. Now, there needs to be a high number of exchanges every day for a product to be in this basket, and they monitor it for some form of tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily in inverted commas, the older nostalgic people. Then we have streaming platforms that people consume music on. Paul, what are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
Definitely at our shows, we've noticed a lot of younger people coming to our shows. The amount of people just buying the t-shirts, the vinyl, the CDs, it is great to see. But a lot of our people, our young people, I think it's just reviving again. You have a lot of older people come to our shows, but the influx of younger people again. But it's not only that. When they are in the audience, little lads, 6, 7 years of age, and they know every word of every song. And it's great to see, but definitely there is a rise. You know, folk music will never die because these young people are going to carry it to the next generation again. So it's never going to die. But as regards merch, yeah, look, vinyl is very popular. People love buying the vinyl. They love the t-shirts and the CDs. As you say, CDs are coming back around. So it's all good. It's all good. But the young people are going to carry it forward and folk music will never die.
Brian, anything to add?
Yeah, it's interesting stats there that you brought up. I'm in a different house now. I moved about 18 months ago and I threw hundreds and hundreds of CDs and they went out and straight into the bin. And now I'm kind of... I know. And you're probably a CD and a vinyl collector. And
yes.
It's probably the worst thing I've ever done. But I'm, you know, it was a case of like restarting, but, you know, restarting to a point of like, I probably threw out the best stuff that I've ever had. But anyway, to answer your question, obviously we've been selling merch for, you know, 15, 16 years of our shows, and CDs were a great seller and then they stopped. People weren't buying them anymore. So you had to look at another way of, you know, bringing in some extra income. So it becomes merch, becomes CDs, or sorry, becomes t-shirts and the like. And as Paul said, we've seen a resurgence in the last... wouldn't go too far, but probably maybe a year and a half to 2 years that people are now starting to buy the CDs again. And vinyl, we've had 9 albums to 10 albums and we've only done vinyl twice. And the last album, The Road Not Taken, the more recent one, which was just over 2 years ago, that is selling really, really well. And I think there's something about holding that vinyl in your hand and playing it. And there's, I think the young kids are now getting it. They're getting it now, how good it can feel to have that. And you were talking about having the booklets on the inside and reading about who was involved in the songs, what instrument each member of the band played, you know. But I think we're trying to retrain the younger audience. It's not just about what they're hearing. It's how it was created.
Yeah.
Who was involved in that song? Like we used to do years ago, you'd be getting the lyric sheets, who wrote the song, and you'd be diving into the band as such, the band and who put it together. As musicians as we are now, we love to see those documentaries of how the songs are put together. And I think we need to get back into that, you know, and it's great to see the young people buying them. Loads of people buying the vinyl now because they want the signature on it. They want to go home and take it. It's great.
The words are great in the booklet because people can learn the song. You know, if the words are there, they can learn it straight away. Good that way.
Exactly. Now, you've got an upcoming tour to Australia in September. I'm in South Africa, so I'm just saying you guys must come perform in South Africa as well soon. I'm just putting that out there.
Will do. Loving the accent, by the way.
Thank you.
Hopefully we can take you to Springboks and Ireland game when we're there.
There we go. Australia is coming up in September. What can the Australian audiences enjoy about the upcoming tour?
It's going to be a lively, lively show. As I said, we do our set list is sort of based on lively material, but we also throw in the golden oldies like The Town I Love So Well, Lassie, Grace, Caledonia, because you have to mix it up because people will love the slower songs along with the faster songs. But no, it's going to be a foot stomping show in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth and Fremantle. It's going to be good.
Brian, I'd love your observation of this. Often I go to concerts and I hear the audience members saying, oh, I hope they play this song. Oh, I hope they play that song. Oh, I hope they play that song. Because there's expectations around what an artist should play. And for me, it's about just showing up and being in the moment and enjoying it. So I never Google the playlist. I never Google this stage. I'm just there in the moment. And often sometimes hear people say that who didn't Google the playlist, but they had an expectation of a certain song being played. And then that song was not played. So then it became a situation of, oh, it wasn't such a great show simply because they had an expectation of what song should be played, and that song wasn't played in their mind. For you, having been on the road for a number of years, having released 19 albums, what are your thoughts around that comment of expectations of audience members of songs that you should play, and then you don't play, and then it becomes a situation of, well, why didn't you play that?
It's a funny one, because like, you'd have loads of people, obviously we meet everybody after the show who wants to meet us at our meet and greets, and you know, you'll always get it from people saying, oh, you know, you didn't play this song or didn't play that song. And then my first answer back is always, well, did you have a great time? Yes, we did, but you didn't play this song. Except we've got hundreds of songs to choose from. And there's this thing now where on social media you see bands putting up the set list, or the fans are mad to get the set list off us. And now we've noticed over the last 18 months or so that they want our set list and they want to see what it is. I mean, we have huge songs that are, you know, streaming into their millions, and there are obviously songs that we're going to do at every single show, but then we've got to pop in some other shows. Look, it's up to every individual whether they liked the show or they didn't like the show. I mean, for somebody to turn around and say they didn't like the show and they didn't like the experience because one particular song that they didn't hear. I love slow melodies. I'm real all about melodic songs. I know when I go to see Coldplay that they're not going to play five or six incredible songs that mean so much to me. I know they're not going to play that, because at the end of the day, they're there to please the crowd and they're there to the radio songs. I saw Blunt. What's his first name?
James.
James.
James Blunt, sorry. James, if you're listening to this podcast, my apologies. I saw James Blunt on social media again, and he actually said to his audience, would you like me to play the songs that you know from the radio? He actually said this to the audience. Would you like me to play the songs from the radio that you all know and can sing along to? Or would you like me to play a few songs from my new album that's coming out in a few months' time? So he did a cheer test. And he said, right, who wants to hear all the old songs? All right, who wants to hear the new album? And it was like, you know, golf clap. And then he said, want to hear all the hits? And the whole place just went nuts. As my dad always says, you know, he always said to me, he said, sing songs that people know. You know, you can't do a full show of songs that they're not going to know, even though you love the artist.
Paul, you first. I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 5 hours, 10 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once you finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs of theirs, what songs would you play?
That is a good question. Definitely probably Bruce Springsteen. I like Dancing in the Dark. Then again, I like a lot of his songs. I love a lot of country. I'm a big fan of American country music, like Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash and all these guys, and Merle Haggard. Yeah, well, Willie Nelson, On the Road Again. I love that song. Merle Haggard, a song called Fugitive, Folsom in Prison, Johnny Cash, and Sunday Morning Coming Down, Chris Christopherson.
Brian, your list?
I'm going to start off with a Scottish band called Delamitri.
Yes, I know them. Yeah.
Oh, just superb. They brought out an album there a couple of years ago. And, oh, sorry, their last album. But Probably Nothing Ever Happens is their biggest one, or the last one to know. Then I'd move to REM, Losing My Religion. Coldplay, obviously, Everglow is one of my all-time favorites. We'd have to go to the Beatles, of course. And probably Let It Be, just for the sentimental fact in there. And I'm going to pick my dad as well. Sean Dunphy, If I Could Choose, was his big song. So there you go. Lovely. Top five. Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. Lemon squeezy. So, Paul, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
In the future, if you haven't been to a High Kings concert, please come, because you will go home with a big smile on your face. Definitely. Just jump on the bandwagon and come with us. It's a good ride. You'll enjoy it.
Brian, anything to add?
Yeah, we've had an amazing ride for the last 18 years, and there's definitely another 18 years left in this band, because we evolve every single year. There's going to be a brand new show coming out next year, a brand new tour called the Rocky Road Tour. We're already working on the production side of that, the stage. Everything is going to be different from what our fans have seen before. We're going to be working on a brand new album in October, November, December. and straight into the Rocky Road Tour back over to America next year. But I wanted to say to the Australian fans in particular, like, this is going to be our third time to go over in 3 years. We were so excited the first time we came over, and it was unbelievable and absolutely floored us. Second time again, the third time lucky. This is going to be insane. I just know that in Australia. But yeah, Paul is right. If anybody hasn't seen an Irish folk band, that, you know, you've got four individual lead singers, you've got four guys who play 15 instruments. It is a rowdy night. It's 2 hours of great fun. And as I always say, if we can help people forget about what's going on in their lives for a couple of hours and put smiles on their faces and they leave happy, then that's our job done.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.